Welcome back. Our next case is United States v. Steele. Captain Bailey, are you prepared to argue on behalf of the appellant?
Yes, sir.
And Major Sunduk, are you prepared to argue on behalf of the government? Please proceed.
Your Honor, I request 3 minutes of rebuttal.
Granted.
Thank you. Chief Judge Olson, members of the court, may it please the court. The federal habeas cause and prejudice standard is an extraordinary standard designed to remedy extraordinary circumstances. In contrast, the wide-ranging Article 66 congressional mandate, which has been described by this court as the proverbial 800-pound gorilla, requires the Army Court to do three things on the basis of an entire record: to affirm only those findings and sentences that are correct in law, correct in fact, and should be approved. Now, these two concepts, Article 66 and cause and prejudice, are incompatible. As this court said in United States versus Chin, either an appellant is entitled to a complete Article 66 review, or they are not, because such review was waived under Article 61. I welcome this court's questions.
So you're standing now on plain language. In your brief, at one point, you seem to veer into policy. You say that imposing the cause and prejudice standard discounts frequent appellate counsel turnover and risks a potted plant role for appellate counsel with regard to new issues, end quote. If we were to adopt that approach, that policy aspect of it, wouldn't we then have to discount issues such as waiver and forfeiture and estoppel and abandonment and law of the case? So doesn't that demonstrate that we shouldn't venture into those policy issues, that we should really decide this simply based on the plain language that we're confronting here?
Your Honor, I think the plain language is very clear, and I think Congress has been very clear with respect to the mandate of Article 66 and the difference in Article 66 versus other civilian appellate courts and what we require a CCA to do under Article 66. I think this court was clear in United States versus Chin talking about waiver and how this court may not be able to review something that was waived. But then this court in United States versus Chin also contrasted this appellate review and this review with a CCA's review, which does have the ability to pierce waiver and does have the ability to make findings of fact that this court couldn't, because they have such a wide-ranging mandate under Article 66 to only affirm what is correct in law, correct in fact, and should in fact be approved.
Counsel, suppose in an ordinary case, not this case, but just in an ordinary case, before the CCA, appellant files a brief, government files a brief, maybe they hear oral argument, and then after the oral argument, appellant raises some more arguments. And then another week later, submits another document with some more arguments. And another week, submits some more arguments. Can't the CCA say, look, the time for submitting arguments has come and gone? We had the initial briefs, there were deadlines, we had the oral argument. But wouldn't your argument be, well, they still have jurisdiction because they haven't decided the case, and under Article 66, they have to consider all the arguments. Well, is there no limiting principle?
No, Your Honor. I think there is a limiting principle, and that principle is once the Army Court and once a panel has found a case and convictions to be correct in law, correct in fact, and that those convictions should be approved, they're under no obligation to reconsider. Now, they have the ability to do so. The UCMJ affords them that ability.
My point is they haven't issued any opinion yet. So somebody's found guilty at court-martial. There's an appeal. Both sides file a brief. There's an oral argument. The CCA takes it under advisement. Before they issue any opinion, appellant continues to submit additional arguments. Under your theory, wouldn't they have to consider those arguments as part of their Article 66 duties, even if they were submitted late, even if they were submitted after the briefs and the oral argument had taken place?
Well, Your Honor, I think there's a distinct difference between accepting a brief and considering all issues contained within a record. And so I don't think that the court would have to accept late submissions. They could, you know, say you filed untimely, right? This is not a timely brief, and therefore we're not going to accept it. However, we have, on the basis of the entire record, considered all issues. And so what doesn't need to be said but is understood based on the mandate of Article 66 is that the Army Court would have considered issues that were raised even in those late briefs that weren't accepted.
What do we make in this case of the second opinion's final paragraph where they say, on consideration of the entire record, we affirm? They did say they considered the entire record. What do we make of that?
Your Honor, the Army Court says, on consideration of the entire record, we affirm. However, the entire basis of the Army Court's opinion says, even if we agreed with appellant's argument that this was unconstitutionally vague, you did not meet the cause and prejudice standard. So even if we agree that you are entitled to relief, we cannot provide it because we have instituted this cause and prejudice standard. So we have essentially thrown up a brick wall to your relief that you would otherwise be entitled to under Article 66. And that's why those two concepts are incompatible.
Counsel, we have on numerous occasions found error in sentencing and affirmed the findings and then sent the case back for a new sentencing hearing. And that goes up to the CCA, and they do whatever they're going to do in their Article 66 review the second time through. Are all those cases unlawful because the findings were affirmed by the CCA on the first go-around and then by us without the entire record because at that point the resentencing hearing hadn't happened yet?
I'm sorry, Your Honor. Just a clarifying point. Are you talking about a case that's come up to CAF and goes back down to ACCA?
Or we send it back to ACCA, and then they send it back down to a military judge for a new sentencing hearing, and then it goes back up to them, and let's just say they affirm the sentence. But the findings haven't been touched, right? They affirmed the findings on the first time through the CCA, and then we affirmed it when it came up to us. So they haven't been revisited. They've just been the same since the first time through on direct review, and then. It seems like under your theory, when it comes back up to the CCF to ACCA for the second time, they have a duty, now that the record has been supplemented, to reevaluate the findings. Is that your position?
Yes, Your Honor.
But that's never been the practice, I don't believe. So were all of those cases, when that's happened, were those all unlawful?
No, Your Honor. I think the point of this case is, if an issue is raised, I think the Army Court and what this case and what this court stated in Gwynn is that you have a mandate to consider. We're not telling you that you have a mandate to decide one way or the other, but you have a mandate under Article 66 to consider. So what that looks like in Gras Stefan, right, is the Army Court has to say, we considered all of these issues that appellant has raised, and we define them to be meritless. And that's kind of stock language when the Army Court has said, we don't find anything there. But in this case, the Army Court accepted appellant's Gras Stefan, identified an issue, and then refused to answer the question.
Well, they struggled with whether or not they had jurisdiction to answer the question. And they might have said no, right? They didn't even do that. They gave it more consideration than arguably they were mandated to. By applying the habeas standard, is this something we should consider? They thought about it and they said no. Is it your position that they are mandated to? It's not that there's a different standard. There's no threshold test that needs to be satisfied. If it comes back up on a question about findings, then they are mandated to reconsider it.
Your Honor, had the Army Court come out with an opinion that said, we considered this issue, affirmed, right? I don't think that would have been an abuse of the Army Court's Article 66 review. And that certainly wouldn't be the issue before this court. However, in this case, what the Army Court did is they said, we have looked at this issue. We agree that there is a question here. They ordered oral arguments. They ordered supplemental briefings and then said, we are going to adopt this standard that prohibits us from providing relief, even in a circumstance where relief would be warranted, because we hypothetically don't find that these convictions are correct in law, correct in fact, and should be approved. But because you did not meet the cause and prejudice standard, we cannot provide you relief. So what it amounts to is a burden shift onto appellant to establish something that Article 66 has already said he's congressionally entitled to.
So how do we draw a distinction there between cause and prejudice standard, where they're saying you may be entitled to relief, but we're not going to provide it, as compared to waiver? Waiver does not appear in Article 66.
Well, Your Honor, I think this court's opinion in Chin, in the language of that opinion, is very instructive in this idea. So this court said, we agree when an error is waived, the result is that there is no error at all, and an appellate court is without authority to reverse a conviction on that basis. This court then goes on to talk about waiver and absent plain error would prevent this court from providing relief to an appellant. However, this court also said, however, this ordinary rule does not apply to a CCA's wholly dissimilar statutory review. Article 66 requires that the CCAs conduct a plenary review and that they affirm only such findings of guilty that are correct or sentence that are correct in law, correct in fact, and should be approved.
So I'm not sure I understand the distinction that you're drawing there. If the CCA says an issue has been waived, and says, essentially using the same language that they've used here in this opinion, boy, you would be entitled to relief here, but under the doctrine of waiver, we're not going to consider it. Waiver is not within the confines of 66. How does the CCA have the authority to apply waiver, but does not have the authority to go with the cause and prejudice standard, in your view?
Your Honor, the cause and prejudice standard, I think there's two parts to that answer, Your Honor. I think the cause and prejudice standard in its intent is not a standard designed for direct review, such as the Army Court. It's not designed for a court taking a look at everything and the entire record. The cause and prejudice standard considers the fact that an appellant in those circumstances has had multiple bites of the proverbial appellate apple, and then is now asking for collateral relief based on a habeas writ. So I think that's the first.
Well, wouldn't accused have had that complete review the first time? I mean, the CCA completely reviewed the record with regards to findings and made their conclusion based upon findings. They found deficiencies in the sentencing and sent that back. So based upon what you said, the analogy could be drawn that the complete review, in fact, took place with regards to findings. So again, going back to the Chief Judge's question, how will you draw that distinction then?
Well, Your Honor, I think there's an important point that the Army Court, in its original opinion, says we find this to be correct in fact. They never found that it is correct in law. They only found that it is correct in fact. So I think that's the first important issue. Secondly, Your Honor, I think this idea of waiver comes back to the idea of when is Article 66 complete, right? And so the court, the Army Court here, said, look, we cannot complete our Article 66 obligations because we do not have an entire record. And so the fact, and an appellant does concede here, in this case specifically, that this resentencing did not have any impact on the findings. We admit that. However, we did not have an entire appellate record with which the Army Court could say this is entirely correct in law, entirely correct in fact, and entirely should be approved. And so the Army Court has now instituted a rule that applies across the board to circumstances where they are limiting their ability to provide relief even when Article 66 says they should.
But counsel, wouldn't in a situation, say for example, that sends it back for new sentencing and maybe a witness says something which casts in doubt the providency of guilty plea, wouldn't that provide cause on appeal such that they would consider it under their standard? I mean, you're pointing out that nothing new came up out of sentencing and so they didn't consider it, but in across the board, if something new did come up in sentencing, wouldn't that be cause?
Well, potentially, Your Honor. However, I think that the case law about cause and prejudice describes and reinforces that this is an extraordinarily high standard, and it's an extraordinarily high standard for a reason, because, you know, in civilian appellate courts, habeas writs are commonly abused.
Well, could
so we want to limit
could we affirm the lower court, but just say, look, when we say when you say cause, it has to mean something. It would have to allow you to raise something that was new in the resentencing. Wouldn't that take care of the problem?
No, Your Honor, because the cause and prejudice standard taken as a whole is still incompatible with Article 66. Right. So the idea that the Army Court could agree, even if it is something in the record that wasn't originally caught, and the Army Court didn't originally catch it when it looked at the findings, they now cannot go back and either reconsider their findings on their own, they cannot consider anything raised by appellant or raised by appellant's counsel, and they would have to essentially move forward a case that the Army Court itself would agree that is incorrect in law, incorrect in fact, and should not be approved. So those self-
But we could distinguish that hypothetical, counsel, because you just said that they identified a deficiency that related to findings. And so that would be the cause to reopen their decision with regards to findings. But you've already conceded that the sentencing rehearing did not raise any issues that affected the findings. So it goes back to Judge Maddox's question. I mean, you can bifurcate, or the system, in fact, was, the process was bifurcated in that the court reviewed the record with regards to findings, made their decision or conclusions as to accuracy of fact, correctness in fact, with regards to the findings, sent it back for sentencing. No new information was elicited during the sentencing that would cause them to question the findings portion. So, yeah, they just set that aside. So I guess that going back to how are we going to thread this needle then? Because if new information is elicited in the rehearing, that would affect findings, would you concede that then the court should go back and reopen the findings?
Your Honor, I see that my time has expired. If I'm
Please proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. Yes, Your Honor, I would concede in that circumstance an appellant may even meet the cause and prejudice standard. However, the idea that the cause and prejudice standard is workable doesn't mean necessarily that it's compatible with Article 66. And I think that this court in Loving and in Gwynn has reiterated the fact that Article 66 may sometimes result in messier appellate litigation than other civilian counterparts may have. However, that has to bend to Article 66, where if the Army Court or appellant or appellant's counsel has identified issues that run counter to something being correct in law, correct in fact, and should not in fact be approved, then the Army Court has an obligation under Gwynn, a mandate under Gwynn, to disapprove those findings and to consider those issues. And so, to Your Honor's point, the idea of waiver is still present. You know, we're not suggesting that the Army Court can never consider waiver. The point is that you cannot limit your own ability to provide relief if something does not meet Article 66.
Further questions from the bench? Seeing none, thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Major Sunday.
Chief Judge Olson, members of the court, may it please the court. Good morning. My name is Major Jennifer Sunduk, and with my co-counsel, Captain Tim Emmons, we represent the United States. The cause and prejudice standard is consistent with Article 66's mandate to the Court of Criminal Appeals to review the entire record and approve that which it finds correct in law and fact. Article 66 does not force a CCA to consider every assignment of error raised by an appellant at every time, nor does continuing jurisdiction force a court to consider an untimely assignment of error which could have been raised before. The cause and prejudice standard promotes justice by ensuring an even application of appellate review so no appellant receives an unfair advantage due to the happenstance of a remand, and giving a second review in limited circumstances beyond what is required by Article 66. It further discourages piecemeal litigation, gamesmanship, and ensures an efficient administration of justice.
In the federal civilian court system, when there are successive direct appeals, do they apply a cause and prejudice standard?
Your Honor, my understanding is they apply strict waiver. So in those situations, if there is a remand and the case comes back to the same court and an appellant raises an issue that he could have raised before, the federal circuits apply waiver strictly.
But they don't use cause and prejudice.
No, Your Honor. So,
why wouldn't waiver be the proper vehicle in a case such as this?
Your Honor, it could be, but I believe that is within the discretion of the courts of criminal appeals to decide whether they choose to employ waiver or to employ a more forgiving standard.
But didn't the U.S. Supreme Court, in coming up in addressing this, say there needs to be two different standards between collateral attacks and successive direct appeals? And wouldn't this violate that idea that the Supreme Court has articulated?
Your Honor, that's not my interpretation of Frady. My interpretation of that case is that the Supreme Court was recognizing that there was established precedent to apply the cause and prejudice standard when there are habeas writs. But Frady does not stand for the idea that cause and prejudice can only apply for writs of habeas corpus. This standard can be borrowed and used in different contexts, though this context is very similar to a collateral attack that we see in writs of habeas corpus. So other courts of criminal appeals have recognized that this standard can be applicable in the military justice system. The Navy Marine Court and the Air Force courts have explicitly employed the cause and prejudice standard, and the Coast Guard Court in Bridges in practice applied the cause and prejudice standard.
Doesn't it seem at least anomalous that this cause and prejudice standard is generated in the civilian court system and they don't use it when it's dealing with successive direct appeals? Here with our CCAs, they have a much broader scope of authority under 66, and yet they're going to import into successive direct appeals something that the federal courts don't do?
Yes, Your Honor. Well, to speak to appellant's concern, Article 66 does give the courts of criminal appeals broad authority, and I think this standard is more consistent with that broad authority than strict waiver would be. So in applying the cause and prejudice standard, the Army Court is giving appellants an opportunity for a second review under Article 66 when the circumstances would be just, when an appellant can show good cause for failing to raise the issue previously and prejudice or manifest injustice.
Now, can I change the subject and just ask about the first CCA opinion? Was it error for them to affirm the findings when they didn't have the entire sentencing record? I mean, for all anybody knew, somebody said something at sentence that would have made the guilty plea improvident. So was it error in the first opinion to affirm the findings?
No, Your Honor, it was not. As Judge Hardy recognized, this has never been the practice in this court or the other CCAs. It is common for this court and other CCAs to affirm the findings independently from the sentence because it's very rare that the sentence is ever going to affect the findings. And as you mentioned, Judge Maggs, a situation where that could happen is a guilty plea or mixed plea where the sentence hearing reflects on the providence of the pleas. In that situation, for example, if that happened in this case, this would be a new issue that could not have been raised before. So if something happened at the sentence rehearing in this case that reflected on the findings, that called into question the providency of the pleas, then this would be an issue that could not have been raised before, so the cause and prejudice standard would not apply.
But my difficulty is that something was missing on that first review, and they still said, well, we've looked at the entire record. I mean, they just really didn't know what was said during those the minutes that were missing from the recording. So it's not an ordinary case, like, you know, maybe there was an improper sentencing instruction or something like that. It was that we just didn't have the witness testimony. I'm just thinking that if this is an unusual case, then we send it back, which is that we don't know what happened at sentencing.
Yes, Your Honor, but the Army Court did not approve the sentence on its first review. It only approved the findings, which were complete. Under Article 66...
But again, we don't know whether something in sentencing rendered the guilty plea improvident. I mean, that happens all... doesn't happen all the time, but it's not unknown.
Yes, Your Honor. So if that were to happen on the second review, when the case came back, if there was a new issue that could not have been raised before, the appellant could then raise that issue and challenge the findings. And the cause and prejudice standard would not prevent the Army Court from considering this new error. So Article 66 just requires that the entire record is considered by the Army Court of Criminal Appeals before it completes its review. In this case, the Army Court considered the entire findings, and it considered the entire sentence rehearing before it affirmed the case as correct in law and fact. And in doing so, it complied with its Article 66 mandate. This court has already approved of the first prong of the cause and prejudice test in U.S. v. Smith. In that case, a CCA declined to hear an untimely assignment of error that was outside the scope of this court's remand order, and this court affirmed that case, finding that the appellant did not have good cause to untimely raise this issue. So that demonstrates that Article 66 does not require a court to hear every assignment of error raised by an appellate at any time, nor does continuing jurisdiction. I'd like to distinguish the case that appellant brought up, Gwynn. So in that case, this court commanded the Court of Criminal Appeals to consider assignments of error that were raised that implicated the sentence appropriateness. In that case, the court had only considered the Eighth Amendment arguments, but not other arguments because they felt it was more appropriate for an Article III court. This court said that if there are assignments of error that implicate sentence appropriateness, then the CCAs must hear those issues. But that does not stand for the proposition that a Court of Criminal Appeals must hear every issue raised by an appellant at any time. This court was just clarifying the scope of review under Article 66. So as I mentioned before, Smith is an example that shows an instance where a CCA completes an Article 66 review when it declines to hear an assignment of error by an appellant. Chin is also an example of this. In Chin, this court recognized that waiver precludes an appellant from raising an issue. So that's another example where this court has said that a CCA can complete an Article 66 review without hearing every specific issue raised by an appellant.
So in your view, how do waiver and cause and prejudice compare to one another in terms of the thought process that the CCA would go through in applying them and the degree to which they might preclude an appellant from raising an issue?
Yes, Your Honor. These standards are very similar, and the Army Court recognized that in a footnote to Steel 2. I believe it's the last footnote. The Army Court recognized that under its should-be-approved power, it could choose to disregard the cause and prejudice test and hear assignments of error, but this case did not call out for relief. So it's the same type of standard. A Court of Criminal Appeals can choose to disregard waiver and hear the issue when the case calls out for relief, and in the same way, the court can choose to apply the cause and prejudice standard, or it can choose not to when the case calls out for relief.
So why is it then that the government is advocating for cause and prejudice rather than saying waiver does the trick?
Because the CCAs have broad discretion, this court has recognized that, in fulfilling their Article 66 mandate. So it's within the Courts of Criminal Appeals' discretion to choose which standards they decide to employ to fulfill their Article 66 mandate.
Isn't there a distinction that could be drawn, though? Waiver is essentially a concept that's been inherent to being judges since time immemorial. Cause and prejudice comes from a specific statute that was passed applicable to the civilians. So why are we importing this when the civilian courts do not even apply it in direct successive appeals? Why would we import that into our system when I'm not really hearing that there's a distinction between waiver and cause and prejudice?
Yes, Your Honor. I can quote the Air Force Court to provide an answer to that question. I think the Air Force Court put it well when in Shabnarok they said, nothing in the peculiarities of military appellate practice counsels against adherence to the cause and prejudice standard laid out by the Supreme Court, and the ends of justice are better served if litigants understand that there are rules to appellate practice just as there are rules to trial practice.
But doesn't that completely ignore the distinction between collateral attacks and successive direct appeals? The Supreme Court is talking about collateral attacks. The statute is talking about collateral attacks. You seem to be indicating waiver does the same trick. Why would we say we should say that the CCAs can adopt this language and this approach?
Yes, Your Honor. Well, I think it's analogous to a collateral attack using a writ of habeas corpus. In this case, the findings are not on direct review. This is a second review. This cannot be said to be the direct review of the findings. This is a collateral review of the findings. So in this case, it makes sense to borrow the standard from federal habeas litigation and apply it.
But wouldn't that same reasoning apply in the federal civilian courts? And as you indicated, they don't apply cause and prejudice in direct successive appeals. They apply strict waiver.
They do, Your Honor, but there is...
So we're somehow ahead of the game here in terms of importing that into our system?
Well, Your Honor, there's no civilian equivalent to Article 66, which is a broad power of review. So I think the Army Court correctly recognized...
Is it a broad power of review only, or is it a broad responsibility of review by the CCA?
Your Honor, I think it is both. So
if it is a broad responsibility, why should there be this importation of cause and prejudice standard? Why don't we just stick with waiver?
Well, I think it's within, I think either is appropriate. Both are compatible under Article 66. But I believe it is within the discretion of the service courts to choose which standards they want to apply to fulfill their duties. I don't think there's anything that requires waiver. There's nothing that requires the cause and prejudice test, but neither are inconsistent with the Article 66 mandate. And with the cause and prejudice standard, an appellant can receive a second review when he meets these standards. So I believe it was in Smith, this court stopped short of saying whether or not an appellant is only entitled this court said an appellant is only entitled to one plenary review, but this court did not go further and say, and he may not receive any more than one appellate, one plenary review under Article 66.
Major Sunder, getting back to the issue raised by Chief Judge Olson, the distinction with waiver and this cause and prejudice analysis, earlier in your presentation, you mentioned that the cause and prejudice standard might be, or you alluded to the fact that it might be a more forgiving standard. Did you mean because waiver, once you declare, a court declares something waived, there's no review at all? Whereas, at least under this standard, you're getting some review. It may not be to the content of the appellant, but there's some review, and you have to meet fairly stringent standards to get any relief under that kind of review. Is that the distinction here?
Yes, Your Honor. From the government's perspective, that is the distinction.
Okay.
The cause and prejudice standard allows an appellant to receive a second plenary review under Article 66 when he can meet certain criteria, while waiver would not permit him to even request review, but under Chin, if the court feels like it would be appropriate to pierce waiver, it could do so.
And let me ask you one other last question here. And you may not know the answer to this since you're not a judge on the CCA, but could this possibly have something to do, this the cause and prejudice standard, have something to do with the lower courts needing or desiring to manage their dockets? I mean, they have a whole lot more cases than we do. I mean, I'll admit they're probably working harder than we are, but don't they have some responsibility to manage their docket as efficiently as possible to give every appellant the best chance at review that they can?
Yes, Your Honor.
And I'm asking, I'm not asking you to get in their minds, but is it possible that that's what's going on here?
Yes, Your Honor. By announcing this standard, it's signaling to appellants that piecemeal litigation is not going to be tolerated and that all known issues must be raised at the very first instance in the interest of judicial economy. Like in this case, if this appellant had raised this unconstitutional vagueness issue on his first review, we would not be here right now. This issue would have already been resolved by the Court of Criminal Appeals. For those reasons, this court should approve of the cause and prejudice standard and affirm the findings of the lower court, pending any further questions.
Any questions from the bench? Seeing none, thank you, Major Sunder.
Thank you.
Captain Bailey. Captain Bailey, could you please address the point seemingly raised, I don't want to put words in the mouth of Major Sunduk, that cause and prejudice is actually a more forgiving standard than waiver for an appellant?
Yes, Your Honor. Well, I think that ignores the case law from this court that freely allows under Gwinn that permits and requires a CCA to pierce waiver in instances where something has been waived, but underlying that, the underlying issue is not correct in law or fact or should be approved. So I think that that ignores what waiver looks like in a CCA context versus the cause and prejudice standard as defined in a federal habeas context. It's an extraordinarily high standard. It requires constitutional ineffectiveness of counsel. It requires new evidence that has not been available to the defense at a prior proceeding. It requires a showing of something that would amount to manifest injustice or actual innocence of an appellant. Things that are standards that are extraordinarily high for a very valid reason, because this is not direct review. It is a collateral attack. And Your Honor, as you pointed out, judicial efficiency is important, right? Courts have to be able to manage their docket. But the cause and prejudice standard is a solution in search of a problem, right? The simplest answer here was for the Army Court to say, look, we don't have a full record, send it back to complete the record and then to complete its Article 66 review. Not to import a standard that requires an appellant to prove both cause and prejudice before the Army Court will even consider whether or not he's entitled to relief under the Article 66 mandate.
Does Captain Bailey, does your position or view of this issue ignore the bifurcated nature of our system? In other words, our court has said, other commentators have said, we have this bifurcated system. There's essentially two proceedings going on in an American court-martial: the findings phase and the sentencing phase. And so I understand your position is to basically, once the CCA decides it is done with its analysis of the findings, that they're really not done, because under Article 66, or is that your position? In other words, under Article 66, as I understand your position, if it goes back for a remand, your case is essentially still on appeal? Is that your view?
Your Honor, I see that I am.
Please proceed.
Thank you, sir. Your Honor, I think my point...
I'm not making light of it. I'm trying to understand. I was an infantry officer, so things have to be, you know, simple.
Right. Yes, Your Honor. And I understand Your Honor's concern about this idea of finality, which is obviously important in an appellate system. However, our point, boiled down to its very basics, is that the Army Court has a mandate under Article 66, which is very clear, and I have at the risk of repeating myself over and over again. It's a very clear mandate, right? And so if the Army Court identifies an additional question, it can't say, we have already thought about the findings in a vacuum, and we have already considered the sentence in a vacuum, and we will not consider this case in its totality, but for a finding of cause and prejudice. That's what Article 66 prevents. And that's what the cause and prejudice analysis would, in this case, or in any case, require. And for that reason, this court should remand this case back down to the Army Court
May I ask one question?
Absolutely.
Did appellant waive the vagueness argument?
No, Your Honor. I think in this case, Your Honor, I think this appellant made a factual and legal sufficiency challenge, and the Army Court found his case correct in its original opinion in fact, and did not find his case correct in law. What the Army Court could have done is considered appellant's Grostefan issue submitted after his resentencing case as something akin to a supplemental brief. However, if they did, for the sake of argument, even if it was waived, the Army Court clearly pierced that waiver in ordering argument, in ordering additional briefings, in considering the issue, and then ultimately deciding to answer its own question.
Further questions from the bench? Seeing none, the case is now submitted. The court thanks counsel for both sides, and the court will stand in recess until 9:30 tomorrow morning.
All rise. Court stands in recess until 9:30 tomorrow morning.